Welcome to the Stories to Love podcast, the podcast where I fangirl over creators and find out all about their inspiration in hopes to boost our own inspiration. I am your host, Tiff Marcello, an inspiration seeker and your resident fangirl. Hi there, this is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and this is episode 25. It is March 28, 2021. Here with me this week is Naima Simone. In this episode, we discuss how Naima brings it for 30 plus books going on 11 years, where she draws her ideas from, and stepping out on faith. We also talk at some length about being moms of college kids and how that's become such a new and eye-opening experience for us. So hopefully you'll hang on for that too. It was a joy to edit this podcast this week. We had this conversation back in January, but I really believe that I was meant to edit this episode this week because it was a reminder to me that there is so much good in the world and there's so much good in the struggles that we face every day. You will feel Naima's optimism through this podcast episode, and it truly backs up these deeply written stories that she writes. So if you haven't read her books, you should and you must. Because Naima just has such a pulse on characters, and you'll be able to see that it's because she's just so self-aware and she has such a pulse on emotion in general. Which brings me to my inspiration for this week, and it is to those who participated and who led the hashtag Stand Up for AAPI movement on Instagram. It was heartening to see so much support for the movement, and the internet can be a lot of things, but done right, it can spread good. In terms of my work this week, just an update, I finished drafting book two in my romance, so I am deep in revisions. That won't be due till May, but I want to make sure I get two or three rounds in before I turn it in. If you remember, first round revisions after the first draft are like the hardest ever in my mind. Structural changes are so painful. I am at the heart of it, a really messy first drafter. So I have friends, for example, who have first drafts that are completely readable, that they probably edit along the way, or perhaps they're just great typists. Like, I make a lot of errors when I'm typing so fast. So my books, the first drafts, are very much not readable. And it's usually starting in the wrong place, or usually the middle of the book is mushy and sagging. And most of the time, it's way under word count. So these following revisions are going to be building up this manuscript so that it's acceptable to my editor when I turn it in. But I am all right with it. I have to be okay with drafting in my way. So every writer has to have their own process. And I am just accepting of the fact that my first draft isn't perfect. And because when with my process, if I stall, honestly, I might never finish because I'll then doubt myself and then I will continue to correct sentences and I'll never get to the end. So what I end up doing is I end up plowing through just so I can get over the hump. And these revisions, these lookbacks are to double back to clean up the mess. I am also preparing for my launch for In a Book Club Far Away. That is in 10 days. Ah, I'm so excited. I'm really nervous. It's already out through Book of the Month. So many wonderful readers have read it and left me such wonderful feedback and are emailing me and sending me messages on social media. And I am so appreciative. But there is still those people that have not received the book because they're not Book of the Month subscribers. So I'm really excited for everybody to read it. At the same time, I'm nervous. At the same time, I'm ready to let it go. And there will be events during release month, and I will post them on Instagram, which is where I'm checking in most of the time these days, as well as my newsletter. I'll be sending out another newsletter this upcoming week. And that way it will go straight to your inbox. And I think that is it for my updates. Yep, I'm looking through my notes. That's it. So that is what's up with me. I do hope that everyone's hanging in there and staying safe and getting your joys and inspiration in wherever you can. I appreciate all those who have subscribed. If you haven't, please do and leave a rating when you can. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please grab one of my books for you and a friend on my website at tiffmarcello.com. And here we go to my fabulous In Conversation with Naima Simone. Hi there, this is Tiff, and this is the Stories to Love podcast, and here with me is Naima Simone. Published since 2009, USA Today bestselling author Naima Simone loves writing sizzling romances with heart, a touch of humor, and snark. Her books have been featured in the Washington Post and Entertainment Weekly and described as balancing crackling electric love scenes with exquisitely rendered characters caught in emotional turmoil. She is wife to Superman, or his non-Kryptonian, less bulletproof equivalent, and mother to the most awesome kids ever. They all live in perfect, sometimes domestically challenged bliss in the southern United States. Welcome, Naima!
Yay! I need to change that bio to always domestically challenged bliss.
We are telling the truth today. That's what's happening.
Right.
So I am so glad to have Naima on the podcast today because I just love her. So we are agency mates. We share the same literary agent, who is Rachel Brooks. And I've had the pleasure of knowing her for so many years now, although only through like Twitter DM.
It's about time I'm seeing her
in person, but not really because she's across the screen. But I wanted to talk to her today. She has been on my list to come onto this podcast because I really wanted to glean like this energy that I know of her and just the joy that anybody who meets her would probably say that is totally evident in the way you are and in the way that you email even and in the way we do DMs. It's like when Naima comes on the DM, like she says something and she drops a bomb or like says something funny and I'm just rolling on the floor. But I also just finished her most recent book, Vows in Name Only, and that's A Harlequin Desire. And that's the first book in the Billionaires of Boston.
Yes.
Is that correct? Uh-huh. Series. And I wanted to chat with her about that. So welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm so thrilled to be here.
Oh my gosh. So 2009, you started writing.
Yes.
And I counted on your website and that's 30 books. Or is it more now?
No. I think that's about right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I calculated it. That's like 2.3 something books per year since 2009.
That's so long ago. I know. And I'm thinking back to that first one and how I was like, I'll never write a second book.
You're an amazing writer. I'm going to read some little snippets here that will just show one or two sentences where I'm just like, dang, I want to write like that. So as you can tell, this is going to be a fangirl episode. But I wanted to just kind of talk about Vows in Name Only, first of all. So tell us what Vows in Name Only is about.
Well, the series, overall series, it's about three brothers who found out about each other when their father died and they were called to the reading of his will and they realized that they existed and he ordered in order for the three of them to inherit, they had to stay and work together at his company for a year. And if they didn't, then the company would be broken apart, sold in pieces, and they would inherit nothing. And they're all very different, come from different backgrounds, they're different races, really. So, and their father was a bit of he was a Rolling Stone. And since I'm trying to curb my language, he was a bit of an a-hole. And so they have to learn to not only work together, but to be brothers. And the first book is about Cain, who's the son that he kept. And he's the so-called golden child and the heir. And he's also the most reserved and the most bitter. because his father, like I said, was an a-hole and he was an abusive a-hole. And so he falls in love with it's a romance. So I don't believe it's a spoiler, but you know, his heroine is kind of the exact opposite of him. And so Devin Cole is his heroine, and they're being blackmailed by her father because it's like a forced relationship kind of trope, and to be together. And she has her reasons for entering into this relationship, which I'm not going to give away because I've given away a lot already. And so you see how they come together and how there's a lot of healing in the book, redemption. And I hope you love it because I loved writing them. Like two wounded souls coming together. And I hope you enjoy the book.
It was a lot for 60,000 words, I want to tell you. Because
I'm that. Made me cut it.
Okay, so it's like 217 pages. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was telling Naima earlier, maybe I'm primed because of the pandemic times. I'm primed to cry. I don't know what it is. But I'm like,
sister.
I read these desires and then they make me mad. Well, they stress me out because of the conflict, right? And then it makes me sad when they, obviously when you hit the dark night of the soul, makes me so sad. And then the resolution always makes me cry. I mean, it is so emotional. And then Naima Simone is an emotional writer, like from the get-go. So I don't think I read your much older backlist, but I started reading you. I started reading you in Entangled.
Oh, those are safe. Yeah,
it was like Scoring with the Wrong Twin. I think it was my first book. I was like, man, what an entree into your books. Because since then, you've just consistently brought it. You know, the emotional payoff, you've brought it every single time. And you have more books coming out. So you have the second book in the series coming out?
Yeah. I just got the edits on that, actually.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to gird my loins before I jump in.
Yeah. As with all edits,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. And I'm writing the third book in the series right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you, like, how do these ideas come to you? What does your well of ideas look like? Is it just snippets of scenes, or is it people, or what is it?
I was trying to think, how did I come up with the idea for this story? And I honestly don't remember how I came up with the idea for this story. I must have been watching something on television. That's usually how I come up. I can come up with ideas from watching 90 Day Fiancé, which is like my go-to reality TV show. I can come up with like from ID Discovery, from a song. Like one time I was listening to, on the way home from church, I was listening to like Jessie's Girl, like by Rick Springfield. And I was like, that is a great idea for a story. Falling in love, secretly in love with your best friends. Like, oh yeah, like the conflict in that. So I started writing a story off of that. Didn't finish, but I started writing it. And like, so it comes from everywhere. But I was thinking about, how did I come up with the idea? And I don't remember, but it must have been great.
Yeah, it is, because it is
it kept flourishing and I came up with it. But that's how I come up with my ideas, from everywhere. Like it can come from everywhere. Watching TV, from a movie, from a song, from, I was sitting, no lie. And I have the notes. I was cleaning up my son's, he moved out. He betrayed me and moved out. And so I'm not going to say to get back at him, because that would be really petty. But yeah, to get back at him, I made his old room my office. And so I was moving in here and I found old notes of just like story ideas. I was sitting in Bible study one time.
Bad girl.
I know. The worst part of it was, my pastor was talking and he was saying something from Revelations. And I was like, oh my God, what a good idea for a story. So instead of taking Bible study notes, I was writing down notes for a story. You didn't hear that, Pastor. So I came up with a great idea for a story.
I love it.
I found the notes. So ideas come from the strangest places.
Yeah.
So
Well, the Billionaires of Boston, I mean, that idea alone of these three brothers, just my heart already from the get-go, my heart just broke, you know? So already you were able to build in some of that empathy that we could have for Kane.
Yes.
Even though he was a cold, cold man.
Yes. And see that to me, they make tortured heroes are the best heroes, right? Because you know those still waters run very deep.
Yeah.
And in order to be that cold and that reserved, something had to happen to him. So you have to pray that as the writer, that you give enough clues into his character that will make the reader stay with you and trust you long enough that they'll stick with you in order to find out what it is that hurt him. And they're willing to dig past that surface, that cold surface, to find out the real man beneath.
Yeah.
And so I hope I did that. I hope people will stick with him long enough to figure out that that's not all that he is.
Yeah. Well, there is a scene in the very end. I'm not going to say what it is, but it just squeezed my heart. It was between the brothers. And I was like, oh, I can't wait for the next book.
I know what you're talking about. I know.
So there is this running theme between Kane and Devin. It's I owe you. It's the idea of owing, right? So like Kane, he feels like he owes himself this business, right? Because he's worked so hard. And by golly, he deserves this business. His father owes him this business.
He's paid his dues.
Yeah. And then you have Devin, who is trying to gain independence, trying to find her way.
Right.
But then her father keeps saying, you owe me. And then she believes that.
Yes.
In the beginning.
Because I mean, of a promise that she made her mother. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's so neat. And I always love it when writers can take, it's the same theme through both of them, just manifesting in different ways. I thought that was just wonderful.
Thank you.
So I'm going to read a couple of lines that you wrote that were not too sinful. Because these desires, if for those people who are listening who aren't romance readers, Harlequin desires are very like, you know, they're desirous. Is that a word? Did I just say the wrong word?
It is now.
Did I totally mess up the first one? But here we go. I'll do one. It says, this is Kane speaking or thinking. No, he didn't need anything else on his plate, like an inappropriate and inconvenient fascination for a woman with eyes like emeralds, a Mona Lisa face, and the curves of a goddess. I'm like, oh my gosh. Can I write like that, please?
Okay, you do.
Where do you come up with that? Okay, here's another one. This is also Kane. A swell of murky emotion, light and dark, joy and pain, need and fear coalesced in his chest, spinning out until it nearly swallowed him along with a teeth clenching pleasure. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is that?
I'm gonna write that down for this book.
Where do you come up with that? Oh my goodness.
I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, I'm underlining. I like to underline books. I don't, you know, lots of folks don't do that with their books, but I do. So okay. The ups and downs in the last 11 years, you must have felt it, right? There have been ups and downs in your...
Absolutely.
I mean, besides this pandemic, of course, that's like global reached.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But in the beginning, when you wrote your first book, you said you worked in banking, right? Mm-hmm. So did you think that a decade later you'd still be writing, or that you'd be a full-time writer a decade later?
Absolutely. No. I just prayed, like when I first started, I just prayed I could write a second book, you know, because I mean, after writing that first one, it took me a year to write the second one, you know, and Who knew that years later, I never thought that I could write a book in months, much less, because it took me so long to write that second one. And I never dreamed, I hoped, you know, but for me, being able to write, period, and being published was the dream. Being able to write full time, I mean, that was huge. That wasn't even in my dream yet. You know, that was like Nora Roberts level dream that wasn't even in my scope. So yeah, that wasn't for me yet. But you know, you always dream bigger. You always dream bigger. And so when I had the opportunity, you know, you just go for it. You step out on faith and you go for it. And even when my husband and I discussed it, it was still huger than what we kind of could grasp, you know? But we just said, we're just going to do it. We were always a two income family, but we said, we both prayed on it. We both said, okay, we're just going to do it. We're going to step out on faith. We're going to, at the beginning of the year, we're going to do it. Yeah. And that was at the beginning of 2011. Mm-hmm. And believe me, it was not easy.
Yeah.
There were times that there were times when I was like, told Gary, I'm just going to go get a part-time job because this, you know, we're not going to be able to do it. And he said, Naima, we both heard the same thing from God. We both said that this is what we heard. This is what God said to us. We're going to continue to step out and walk out on what we both heard. So you're going to do what you're going to continue to write. I'm going to continue to work. We're both going to continue to tithe on what you make, how little. Yeah. I'm going to continue to support and do, and we're going to let God do what he does. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. And slowly the contracts started to come. The more success started to come, and we're here, you know, and by no means am I saying like, are we rolling in it? No, but am I where I would, you know, at the top where I would let, no, this journey is not over. Okay. I'm not where we were. I'm not at that where there was one Sunday where I'll never forget that Sunday that I drove to church. I had just gotten my first royalty check.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be my first royalty check after I had become a full-time writer. And I opened it up and I was driving on my way to church and I opened it up and I parked and I looked at it. Yeah. And the first person I saw was my father. I got out the car. I looked at him. He looked at me and he said, "What's wrong?" I couldn't even get the words out. I just started crying. Oh. And he just started hugging. I was crying and he was hugging me in the church parking lot.
The humility in this business is real.
Yes. I wanted to quit. I wanted to quit and go back. And he was like, "Listen, this is what y'all decided. You said you heard from God. This is what y'all decided."
That's right. Here you go.
Telling you, there were moments where but by the grace of God, there were moments. I looked at our tax returns some years and I was like, how in the world did we make it?
Yeah.
And you look at those and you're like, but by the grace of God, do we make it?
Yeah.
And I still do sometimes. I still do. But, you know, I still have a long way to go. But I look back and I'm like, but I'm farther than I was, you know. And so, yeah, I never thought there were times I would have never believed I'm where I'm at. Never. And I'm so thankful. I'm so incredibly thankful to be where I am.
It's like you know how you mentioned like in your first couple of books, it took you a long time to write it, right?
Oh, so absolutely.
You're, you know, able to write books a little bit faster and then you're able to edit faster and all of this. You're also, your hustling muscle is also pretty strong, right? 11 years down the road. Now, where do you get that energy? Like it is, I feel like it's an unending well from what I see on this side of the screen, like, because you are also equally as supportive of other authors, right? So what do you do to keep that hustle alive, you know, because there's more years to come in this business?
I truly believe that you do for others what you would love others to do for you. And I have to constantly keep telling myself, because honestly, I'm like, and I tell people this and they like laugh because they don't see it. But I'm honestly one of the like most, I'm an introvert. I'm like one of the shyest people you would meet ever. See? Why you laugh? I'm telling you. You should have seen before this podcast, you should have seen me in the bathroom. I was like, oh Jesus Christ, I gotta do this podcast and talk. I gotta talk. I'm so incredibly shy and I'm an introvert. So like talking to people and being on social media and being like out there is so hard for me. But my rule of thumb is doing for others what you would love for people to do for you. So that pushes me. And so sharing for other people and, you know, putting other people out there, pimping other people, it's not hard for me. And it's not really, it sounds selfish, but it's not, because, you know, you would love people to do that for you, but encouraging other people, uplifting them. And it's also what other people did for me when I was first out there. I remember when my first book came out for Laura's Cave, and I had no clue about promotion. Nobody told me that when I got my contract. I thought you just wrote a book and your publisher did all of that for you. Nobody told me you had to self-promote, right? And so when I first got my contract, I remember Nina Croft was the first person who messaged me and said, "Hey, I have a blog. Do you want to come, you know, guest on my blog?" I was like, "Wow, that was so nice." She would just message me out of the blue. And so I try to just be like that, what other authors did for me. Deborah Glass, like when I wasn't even published yet, Deborah Glass offered to read my book and reach out to her author, to her editor at Allure's Cave, and say, "Hey, I know when this author, she's fabulous. Mm-hmm. You're on the lookout for her submission." I mean, who does that?
Yeah. But
whenever I can just be kind, it costs nothing to be kind. It costs nothing to retweet. It costs nothing. So, I mean, that's what I love to do for other authors. And so when I can, I can. And as far as hustling, because I have no choice. Because I need to eat.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's this musician who Maroon 5, who's the lead singer of Maroon 5? His name just
Adam Levine.
So Adam Levine, like somebody interviewed him and said, "You know, you're not only like doing that, the voice, you're also like singing, and then you're also in the Proactive commercial."
Yeah, I love that.
Like they're kind of making fun of him, you know, like, what?
Listen, you got
me. Why are you doing all this? And he said, "You don't understand this business." He's like, "When there's a chance to hustle and work hard, you've got to do it when you can and when you have energy. Because after that, you just don't know how long this career is going to last." That's how I feel too.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I, you know, families, we go through our ups and downs and my energy level goes up and down. So when my energy level is up, I'm like, I've got to, let me see what I can do with this energy that I have. Or like, you know, when there's like a crisis, you know, and
absolutely,
then.
Absolutely, pandemic.
Yeah. Like a pandemic. Where like you sometimes slow down a little bit, right? I am glad that, wow, I'm glad that I worked a little bit harder on these other months. There are going to be fallow months.
Right.
And so you have to work on those months when you are, you know, bountiful, I guess.
Because you never know when what you put in the ground today might need to just, that might need to push you along for the slow months, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that too. Definitely,
Adam Levine. Poor Adam Levine. I can't believe they called him out of Proactive. I was like, dang.
What's that one commercial he had though? Where I don't even know what was that commercial for? Where he was, and that's the commercial that made him just entirely sexy to me.
Which one?
He was in bed with this girl, and I guess he was late for something and he jumped up, threw on his clothes and like ran out. And then he forgot something and he came back to the door and she handed him something.
Oh and my God.
I was like, you are so incredibly sexy to me right
yes.
now. I don't even remember what, now I got to go on YouTube when we get off and find it and just look at it. This made him incredibly sexy to me because he was not up until that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
he was hot.
It's so funny because my daughter, who's like, she's 15, she listens to Maroon 5 and Adam Levine because, you know, Glee sang it. So, of course, since Glee sang it, she now sings it. All the songs that we used to love, the only reason why she knows it is because she watched – she's Glee, and so she is now like a U2 lover. I don't know what. But anyway, so she said the time when she realized that Adam Levine was no longer for her was when he took off his shirt during the Super Bowl.
Oh,
yeah, I was like,
well, she ain't
because she said, Mom, he's like a dad. It's like, what? What's Adam Levine you're talking about? I don't know. I feel like I'm still 15 and I'm 20, you know, I feel very young until like my kids say something and then all of a sudden I'm like in a different category and I'm old, I guess. I don't know. So wait, your son, just because I am a mom of college kids. When did your son leave for school for college?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Okay, so my son too left for college 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Let's commiserate for like a couple of minutes on being a mom of college kids. I feel like it is this push and pull of why doesn't he love me more? And what is he doing over there? Like, where is he?
Yeah, and
a push time, and pull. I don't want to know.
Yes, I was just about to say that. Like, what is he doing? And oh God, I really just don't tell me. Don't tell me. Yes. I don't.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I don't even need to know your friends.
Yes.
Matter of fact, definitely don't tell me if you're having sex.
Well, the thing is, here's the thing. My son, I love him. He's the sweetest.
Mine too.
He's very open.
Mine too.
And I'm just like, don't say anything else. Don't say anything.
Please,
like,
God, don't say anything else.
And is it just because our parents... I was not an angel, but I didn't come home and tell my parents because my parents, there was this, for me anyway, for our family, there was a true barrier of information, right? Like, there are things that I'm just never going to say to them. And they'll just assume all they want, but I won't confirm nor deny. I'm just going to, but I have apparently built a safe space for my family. And my son will come and tell me, like, the drinks he's drunk, the things. And I'm just like, yo, I don't want to know. And, like, I want to know, but I don't want to know. I don't want to know, but I want to know. Like, it's just – and at the same time is I have to trust that I've taught him everything.
And
then at the same time, I'm writing romance and men. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh. Listen. I did not anticipate these feelings. And I don't know if that's just a phase. Is this just a phase that first time with moms of first time adults, like transitioning adults, goes through where you realize that you aren't far behind that time that when we were in college, you know?
Listen, I know what I was doing in college.
Yeah.
Which makes me very scared about what he's doing in college.
Okay.
And I feel like it's payback. Because I really, really, really know what I was doing in college.
Okay? Yeah.
And where I went to college was a small town. And since I know what I got up to in college and I was in a small town and he's not in a small town and there's a heck of a lot more like available, makes me much more scared, which means I really don't want to know what he's up to. But I totally agree. I'm a pastor's kid, which means I really didn't share quite as much with my parents.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so... Now I do, like, I share more because I'm, you know, 40-ish.
Yeah.
But at 18, 19, 20, you didn't share with the pastor what you share with now.
No.
But I don't know if it's because I'm a I'm a Roman. Like, well, let me get this straight. Like, let me put this out here. When he lived here, when he was in high school, dude closed his door. We barely saw him. He played on a video game. But then when he went to college, it was like he realized that he loved me. He missed me.
Yeah.
We're really good friends now. He wants to hear my voice. We're talking. He's calling. He's sharing so much.
Yeah.
I want him to shut up. I don't want to hear all of this. Oh my God, I'm breaking out in hives.
I just... You know, for example, this is so simple. Like, for example, right? This is Christmas and it's just our family, or New Year's. It's our family. Oh. So my husband poured me and him some champagne. And my son just automatically.
Oh my God, it's like, yes.
And then I felt like, should I be cool right now?
Right.
You know, because he is home for a New Year's and no one's celebrating New Year's. It is just us. I mean, we're playing games for New Year's. We're singing during New Year's. I'm like, what, am I going to ruin this moment? And my husband just looked at me like, shut up.
Shut up. Oh, when you say, oh, Kevin, you better not be drinking. You never be drinking. Oh, I don't like beer. Well, how do you know you don't like beer?
I know. Yes.
How do you know you don't like beer?
Yeah.
You obviously had to have been drinking beer in order to know you don't like beer.
I know. It stresses me out. Yeah. And the thing is that it's not like we were. I know. I'm like, shh.
You want to ask these questions, but you don't.
No. And at the same time, we were 20. We remember when we were
20. I know what I was doing at 20.
Yeah.
I was drinking Fuzzy Nables in the club.
Yes. Schnapps.
I was drinking cranberry vodka.
So bad. So, and it's, and we were fine. And look at us. Look at that. Look at us. We are so good.
We're such good people. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm just so glad because sometimes I'm just like, I don't know if it's just me, but I all this time, like, I have friends who are a little older, or I don't want to say older because age doesn't do that, but more forward in their family life that had teenagers before me.
Right.
And they would say things to me like, oh, you think it's hard now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, how can that be? They're all leaving for college. Like, who's, what do you mean it's hard? And now I'm like, oh, I'm fully humbled. Like,
my sister has twins and they are a little older than, you know, Kevin. And I'm just throwing his name out there. I hope none of his friends listen to this because I'm just throwing him all under the bus with his name. But she was like, so sometimes she would be so helicopter mom-ish. And I was like, Nina, just lighten up. But now I totally get it. I just want to apologize, even though I'm not, because I'm petty like that. But now I just want to, because I'm like, oh, I so get it now. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh, being a mom.
God, it's a never-ending job.
I'm stressed out.
Oh, God.
But you have a twin.
Yes.
By golly, I know that you guys really look alike. I mean, you are identical twins.
Yeah, I can't go into Walmart, and she's a teacher, eighth grade. Teacher.
Oh my gosh, she must be popular then. They're like, Miss So-and-so.
I can't go into Walmart without being called out. Hi, Miss So-and-so. I'm not going to say her name. Miss So-and-so, hey. And she's a mean teacher. So I'm afraid one day I'm just going to get swung on by one of her students or one of his moms.
Now, does she write also?
No, she doesn't write, but I'm going to call her out because when we were younger, she did. And she could write the best New Kids on the Block fan fiction ever.
Oh my God, did you just say New Kids on the Block?
Yes, she would write the best Donnie fan fiction for me, and I would write Joe McIntyre fan fiction for her. And she was so good. Oh my God, I remember she wrote this great story of when Donnie hurt my feelings, and then it was just so wonderful how we made up. And it was so good. She was so good. And I wrote great show back fan fiction for her.
That means it's in there.
I know
that means
it
the
is.
Writing is.
I know it is.
We have to tell her to listen to this so she can start writing.
nowadays she's just, well, she just got her PhD like last June or May.
Congratulations to her.
She still writes. It's just articles for whatever she does.
All that PhD stuff.
All that PhD stuff. Whatever.
So tell us your upcoming schedule. Like, what is up for the rest of the, what are, 2021? So what is up for 2021 and beyond?
Well, Monday, I have A Desire coming out back in a Texan's Bed. It's a Harlequin Desires, book one in the new Texas Cattleman Club series.
Is this a continuation? Is this a continuation? No, it's not. Yeah.
Texas Cattleman Club, new miniseries called Air Apparent. So it's book one in that. And then in April, I have the novella that's like the 0.5 for the Rosebin series, our new single title Rosebin series from HQN. And then later on that month is the first book in that series called The Road to Rosebin.
Wow.
Yes.
With a gorgeous cover.
Oh, God. I love that cover.
So beautiful. Yes,
I love it.
Is that already up on pre-order?
Yes. Yeah. Both of them are. Both of them are. And it's my small town romance series. And it looks sweet, but it's not.
Okay. Yeah. There should be like ratings. Because the first time I saw that, I was thinking, Naima's going to write sweet?
No, Naima's not doing sweet.
Okay.
It is slow burn, though. That book almost took me out without how slow burn it was, because I was like, why are you still talking? Just have sex. Please have sex.
That is so funny. Please
just stop talking already.
You're like, stop talking. You mean for it?
But when they did have sex, they had sex.
Here we go.
On the floor, on the bed, on the couch. But...
And that's like, it's a full length. So like 85,000 words.
Oh my God. Like, I couldn't believe, like, it's so funny because the contract said 75 to 90. When I got about to like 85, I emailed my editor and said, so how solid are we on that 90?
You're like, I'm still trying to get them together.
Yeah. She's like, just go ahead and write, and then we'll just work it out and edit. And I was like, good deal.
I love that.
So that's in May. And then in June, I have Broody, I think that's like about 55, Broody Brit, about 55K. It's in the Cocky Hero Club world from V. Keelan and Penelope Ward. It's called Broody Brit. And awesome. Then in September, it's
This is number four. Yeah.
It's book two in the Billionaires of Boston series. It's called Secrets of a One-Night Stand. It's a Keeley's book.
Oh.
Yes. And then in October.
Oh, my God. That's five.
Yeah. In October it's either September or October. I'm not sure. Is another Rosebin novella. And then in the end of October is the second Rosebin novella. It's a Christmas book.
And I love that. Yeah. I love that.
And oh my God, it's Cole's brother. So it's Wolf's book. So, and that's it. It's a busy year.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. It's a busy year.
It's like I could talk to you for another like 12 years, but okay, I just need to ask this one question. And then it's because we're 40 minutes in. I'm like, oh my gosh, I need more. But okay, do you have a separate book Bible for each of these? Because each of these are part of series. So how are you separating these things? Are there three different computers that are running? You know, I guess, I don't know. Like, how are you ensuring that all the storylines are straight? What is your like physical manifestations? What do you actually do for that?
I have a synopsis for each one. And I have like a separate folder for each one. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I just go back and forth to look at each synopsis in each book. I would like to say I have a story Bible for each one, but I don't. I would love to say I do that, but I don't, because I'm just not that organized.
It's hard to put that time in while you're trying to write these stories.
Yeah.
You know?
But I do like go back
the name. I'm envisioning all the names of secondary and tertiary characters that are probably like, do they cross over? Do you absolutely accidentally rename?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Especially in, you know, interconnected books like, you know, the Boston, the Billionaires of Boston series, because all the brothers appear in each book. Right. They all have scenes in each book. And then of course in the Rosebin series, all those characters appear because it's a small town. And then not just the family, because it's a huge family in that series, because it's a small town, and in small town series, there are characters that are unique to those towns that make the towns themselves, you know, that they create the uniqueness of that town. So yeah, they appear in each book.
Right.
So, you know, you definitely have to keep that.
I love small towns.
I do too. They just like make up the fabric of that town. And so
yeah, I love it.
In order to make that town so memorable, they have to appear in each book.
And yeah,
so that definitely.
And then you're creating the streets. And yes, then I just feel like that's so neat.
Yeah.
And so you're probably envisioning a lot of books in this Rosebin series.
Harlequin, are you listening?
No,
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like,
I hope so.
I mean, that's in your mind. Like, for example, the romance I'm writing for Montlake is happening on a couple's resort in the Outer Banks. I consider it a small town because it's within its own confines, right? And there are people that work at this place. And then next thing you know, they're hooking up.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I am like 5 books deep in my thoughts.
Right.
Because I'm thinking, as I'm creating characters, I'm not just creating just for the hex, you know, like I am creating for longevity.
And also as you're writing, you're even creating personalities for them. And so your personalities, you're creating like storylines already.
Yeah, already.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah. That's what I love about small towns, because I want to be immersed in a completely different world, but I am more a contemporary reader than I am.
It's a world.
But it's a world of its own.
Yeah. It's not paranormal, yeah, but it is a world that you're creating. Absolutely. I have some of my favorite books are small towns, like Jessica Prince, and like, mm-hmm, oh, I'm so in love with her small, like she has 2 series and I'm so in love with them.
Yeah.
They're both small town. And
which
and of course, so, Kristen Ashley.
So who, what are you reading right now? You mentioned you were reading something earlier.
Cause you know, I'm a book whore. So I don't believe in book monogamy. So I read several books at one time.
Yes.
According to my mood. So yeah, right now I'm reading Clash by Belle Aurora. And I'm also reading Big Bad Wolf by, are you reading that too?
No, but I'm getting it. Yeah. It's on my list. Yep. It's like one of my favorite words.
Snyder. I'm reading that too. I'm reading The Sweetest Fix by Tessa Bailey.
Oh, I haven't read that yet.
God, it's so good. So good. And the last one is Amico by Ella Maven.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a sci-fi romance. I fell in total love with, and I'm not like a huge sci-fi romance reader, but I've read off and on, but her series first was the Drixonian Warriors, which was freaking so good.
I'm reading Take a Hint, Danny Brown.
Oh my God, I love that. Okay, listen, I love that series. I'm waiting on the next book to come out in March. I am so fiending for that book. At Your Age, E. Brown. Oh, so waiting on that book.
I really want to read Eve now, right? Because I'm seeing glimpses of Eve. I mean, it's just, you get so excited. Like, you know, and I'm also reading Jennifer Probst's Love on Beach Avenue. Oh, so that's sort of like,
yeah, I love.
I mean, Jennifer Probst is always just
great, read.
Solid.
Oh my goodness, she always delivers a fantastic book. Ever since she was with Entangled, I've read her. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Did you see that Talia Hibbert announced she's doing?
She's starting a new series.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. I'm so excited about that.
Yes, I am too. I forgot what it's called.
I am too. But it's a spinoff of the Brown Sisters series.
Yeah.
So I'm so excited.
I mean, she's just The writing is so good.
Oh my God. Like, I'll read anything she writes.
The sarcasm, the dry humor.
It's like so British.
And it's so spot on.
It's so like, good. It's like,
it's like under the surface. You know what I mean? Like, so it just, it kind of just,
and it just so solid. It's just.
And sometimes my laughs will come after. Like, I'll read it and I'm like, three lines down. I'm like,
it's so dry. It's so.
And in real life, I am not, I don't know how to take dry jokes because I never know if somebody's serious. So, but when I read it, it is so cool.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, oh, I mean, it's neat how everybody has such a different style. Like, you can give folks different topics or the same topics, but they would write it completely different. Yeah. Because
her voice is so distinctive.
It's so distinct.
You can, like, if you stripped her name from the top of a book.
Oh yeah.
But you gave me just her, like you just gave me the page, I'd be able to identify her. Like, her voice is so distinctive. I love that. I absolutely love it.
Oh great.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
We are now at 50 minutes. Oh, oh my God.
It doesn't seem that long.
It doesn't seem that long. Okay. I don't know. I think half of it was like talking about our attempt at being good moms. Okay, tell us where we can find you.
Okay, NaimaSimone.com. I'm also on Facebook at NaimaSimoneAuthor. I think that's where you know. just put in Naima Simone. I'm also at Instagram. Just put in Naima Simone Author because I don't even remember like that thing. And I'm on Twitter, but not a lot. So just try those other places.
I know what you mean. It's tough sometimes having to like, you're like, where do I go first? I miss everybody. Like, where do I go? Okay. So thank you everyone for joining us today here at the Stories to Live podcast. And we will see you again. Bye. Thank you so much for joining me, Tiff Marcello, at the Stories to Live podcast. You can follow me through my newsletter at tiffmarcello.com and Instagram and Facebook, as well as Twitter under Tiff Marcello and Stories to Love podcast. You can support this podcast by picking up my most current book, Once Upon a Sunset. Thank you for joining me.